Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter, with Ambrosine Philpotts as Miss Climson, and Gabriel Wolfe as Inspector Parker. Unnatural Death by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 7 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 1, No Sign of Foul Play.
Charles?
Yes?
You don't have to eat snails if you don't like them, you know, just because you're in Soho.
Hmm? No. They're excellent, Peter. They're quite... Well, if you...
Yeah, I thought you didn't. Why wrestle with a harsh fate any longer? Waiter.
Oui, milord.
Take Mr. Parker's snails away and bring oysters instead.
Oui, milord.
Now then, what were you saying, Charles?
Well, merely that if a doctor thinks that one of his patients has been murdered, he should say something. But surely...
My dear Charles, it don't do for people, least of all doctors, to go about thinking things. They may get into frightful trouble.
Oh, but surely it's his public duty at least to voice his suspicions?
Your public duty, yes. You're a policeman. If you have suspicions and invite investigation and generally raise hell for everybody and then turn out to be mistaken, nobody says very much. Well, beyond that you're a smart, painstaking officer, though a little overzealous. But doctors, poor devils, are everlastingly walking a kind of social tightrope. Mm. Ah, here we are. Thank you, waiter.
Thank you.
Monsieur.
No, old Parker Bird, people don't fancy calling in a doctor who's liable to bring out accusations of murder on the smallest provocation.
Excuse me?
Yes?
It's frightfully rude of me to break in, I know, but I couldn't help overhearing what you just said. It's absolutely true, and mine's a case in point. If I had behaved like a man of the world instead of a zealous citizen, I shouldn't be hunting about for a new job today.
You're a doctor?
Yes, and I... Oh, no. No, I shouldn't have interrupted your meal. I'm so sorry.
My dear sir, I feel exactly like Prince Florizel of Bohemia. I am confident you have an interesting story to relate, and shall be greatly obliged if you will favour us with a recital. I perceive that you have finished your dinner, and it will therefore perhaps not be disagreeable to you to remove to this table and entertain us with your story while we eat.
Oh.
Pardon my Stevensonian manner. My sympathy is nonetheless on that account.
Don't be an ass, Peter. My friend's a much more rational person than you might suppose to hear him talk, I assure you, Doctor.
Oh, well, I'll tell you about it with pleasure, then.
I'll have something to drink first. It's a poor heart that never rejoices.
Thank you.
Now, if you will please begin right at the beginning, I have a very trivial mind. Details delight me, ramifications enchant me. Distance no object, no reasonable offer refused.
Well then, to begin at the very beginning. About 3 years ago, I bought a nice little practice that... No, I'd better not mention any names. Let's call it X, down Hampshire way. Now, I'm particularly interested in the subject of cancer. Indeed, I hope to specialise in it one day when my ship comes home. So I was greatly pleased to find a cancer case, an old lady, on my list of patients. But when I arrived, she was 72 and had already had one operation, and after about 8 months, another became necessary. So I brought her up to London, to my old chief, Sir Warburton Giles.
Yeah, she was pretty well off then.
She was quite a wealthy woman. Anyway, the operation was performed very successfully from the surgical point of view, though it revealed all too clearly that a vital organ was being encroached upon and that the end could only be a matter of time. Mm. However, she rallied so amazingly after the operation, she was soon able to dismiss her nurse and go back being cared for by her niece.
Her niece?
Well, her great-niece, to be precise. A young woman of about 25, who'd thrown up her job as nurse at the Royal Free Hospital to look after her great-aunt, about a year before I took over the practice. She was the old lady's only living relative.
Was she, by Jove? Do you happen to know whether your patient ever made a will?
Well, no, she didn't, as it happens. I believe her solicitor, a family lawyer from her hometown, not our local man, tried to get her to make one. But she became very excited and angry, declaring that everyone's in a conspiracy to kill her before her time. Well, according to her niece, the solicitor gave no real explanation before he left, but impressed on her that if at any time her aunt expressed a wish to see him, she was to send for him at any hour of the day or night, and he would come at once.
Interesting.
Was he ever sent for? No. The old lady was deeply offended with him and immediately transferred her affairs to a local solicitor. And then shortly afterwards a third operation became necessary, and after that she became a bit gaga, so it was more or less out of the question.
I see. When was this?
In April 1925, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, even at that late stage, the old lady's bodily strength was remarkable. I was investigating a new method of treatment, and the results were extraordinarily interesting. That's really what made it so annoying to me when it happened.
Well, what happened?
Let the doctor tell his story his own way, Charles.
No, it's all right. I should mention that by this time we were obliged to have an outside nurse for the patient, as the niece could not do both day and night duty.
Uh-huh.
The first nurse came in April. She was the most charming and capable young woman. The ideal nurse, in fact. I may as well tell you at once that I became deeply attached to this lady, and she to me. We are engaged, and had hoped to be married this year, if it hadn't been for my damned conscientiousness and public spirit.
Jolly bad luck.
Well, that's by the way, I suppose. Anyway, in September, for some reason, the patient began to imagine that the nurse, my fiancée, that is, wanted to kill her. The same idea she'd had about the lawyer, you see. And earnestly assured the niece that she was being poisoned. Her reasoning was useless. She cried out and refused to let the nurse come near her. Well, when something like that happens, naturally there's nothing for it but to get rid of the nurse. So I sent her back to town. Hired another one. Then I began to have trouble with the niece.
What do you mean that
oh,
she
no,
is...
No, not like that. I suppose all this long, drawn-out business was getting on the poor girl's nerves. Anyway, she began to believe that her aunt was very much worse than she actually was. So much so, indeed, that on one occasion, early in November, she sent for me hurriedly in the middle of the night, because she said her aunt was on the point of death.
And was she?
Charles.
No, she wasn't. In great pain, certainly, but in no immediate danger. In fact, her heart was still exceptionally strong, and after a subsequent examination, I was able to reassure her niece that she would live for another 5 or 6 months. As you know, in cases like hers, one can speak with a very fair certainty. Well, 3 days later, I was just sitting down to dinner when a telephone message came. Would I go over at once? The patient was dead.
Good gracious. It's perfectly obvious.
Shut up, Sherlock. The doctor's story is not going to be obvious. Far from it, as the private said when he aimed at the bullseye and hit the gunnery instructor. So, the old lady was dead, eh, Doctor?
Yes.
Died in her sleep, I suppose. Everything all ship-shape and Bristol fashion, no struggle, wounds, hemorrhages, or obvious symptoms, naturally, what?
Exactly.
Naturally. Who discovered the body?
The niece.
Mm-hmm.
The nurse had gone out of the room for a few moments, and the niece came in and found her aunt dead. I was completely puzzled, and so was the nurse.
And the niece?
Oh, she could say nothing but, I told you so, I told you so. I knew she was worse than you thought. Well, to cut a long story short, I was so bothered with my pet patient going off like that that the next morning I asked for a post-mortem.
Any difficulty?
Not the slightest. The old lady had, at one time, expressed a desire to be cremated, and this meant getting a man with special qualifications to sign the certificate with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I persuaded this other doctor to come and help me do the autopsy.
Did you find anything?
Not a thing. The other man said I was a fool to kick up a fuss, and it would be quite enough to put down cause of death, cancer, immediate cause, heart failure, and leave it at that. But I was a damned conscientious ass. I said I wasn't satisfied. There was absolutely nothing about the body to explain the death naturally, and I insisted on an analysis.
Did you actually suspect...
Oh, no, not exactly. And certainly nothing came of it. There was no trace of poison or anything of that sort, and the analysis left us exactly where we were. Except that the funeral was held up and things got round. The coroner heard about it, started to make inquiries, and I began to think I'd made a ghastly exhibition of myself. So, rather against my own professional judgment, I signed the certificate, and my patient was finally got into her grave after a week of worry.
Grave?
Oh, yes. The crematorium authorities, who were pretty particular, refused to act in the matter. So the body is now filed in the churchyard, for reference, if necessary.
I see.
There was a huge attendance at the funeral. A great deal of sympathy for the niece.
Mm.
Well, the next day, I got a note from one of my most influential patients, saying that my professional services would no longer be required. And within a year, my practice had dwindled to virtually nothing. so I sold it. Took a holiday to get the taste out of my mouth. And here I am, back, looking for another opening. And that's that. And the moral is, don't be officious about public duties. The cats. Confusion to them.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, Doctor, I'm feeling rather interested in this case. And since I always make it a rule to investigate anything I feel like investigating, perhaps I ought to introduce myself. My name is Peter Whimsey.
Oh, good heavens. Really? I wondered why your face was so familiar.
Yes, it's a silly kind of face, of course, but rather disarming, don't you think? But I do hope it ain't contracting a sleuth-like expression or anything unpleasant. This is the real sleuth, Detective Inspector Parker of Scotland Yard.
How do you do?
He's the one who really does the work. Well, now, look here, Doctor. I'd like to have a go at this. If you'll entrust me with your own name and address and the names of the parties concerned, I'd very much like to have a shot at looking into it.
No, it's very good of you, Lord Peter, but I think I'd rather not, thanks all the same. I've already stirred up enough fuss. Better to let sleeping dogs lie now.
As you like. But I'll think it over, and if any useful suggestion occurs to me, I'll let you know.
You will? Without my name and address?
I am Hawkshaw, the detective, Doctor. And you shall hear from me. Anyhow, before the end of the week.
It may be a lovely morning, Whimsy, old man, but could you tell me precisely where you're taking me? I've got work to do.
We are going to Pimlico, Charles, where I'm going to introduce you to a friend of mine. I think you'll be interested. Well, in fact, you'll be the first person I've ever taken to see her.
Her? Look, Peter, I do think I ought to be getting back.
No, you oughtn't, Charles. I should really like you two to meet. Now, tell me, what did you really think of the doctor's story last night?
Oh, that. I thought it sounded rather as though our friend had been a bit too cocksure about his grand medical specialising. After all, the old girl might easily have had some sort of heart attack. She was very old and ill.
So she might. Though I believe, as a matter of fact, cancer patients very seldom pop off in that unexpected way. Still, I agree. I wouldn't have thought much of it myself if it hadn't been for the niece. She prepared the way for the death, you see, Charles, by describing her aunt as so much worse than she was.
Yes, but what could she have done? Well, she didn't poison the old lady. She couldn't even have smothered her, or they'd have found some signs of it on the body.
She could have startled her to death. Not legal murder, probably, but it might be worth looking into.
But where's the motive? The niece stood to inherit everything anyway. It's not as if the old girl was thinking of making a will in favour of anybody else. Now, I think you've found a mare's nest here, Whimsy. You've got nothing to go on but a conceited young doctor's opinion.
You've got an official mind, Charles. Your official passion for evidence is gradually smothering your instincts. I know there is something wrong about this case, Charles. I have a sensation of internal gloating which assures me that there is something to be investigated. That feeling has never failed me yet, and I trust it never will. They told me the other night there was something wrong about that case of reputed Lafitte 76, which that infernal fellow, Pettigrew Robinson, had the nerve to try out on me. It had a nasty flavour, Charles, and so does this.
Nasty flavour, be damned, Peter. There's no indication of violence or poison. There's no motive. There's no possibility of proving anything against anybody, even if we knew any of them were.
Ah, but we soon will know that. Look here, will you take a bet on it? I will lay you 10-1 that the old lady was murdered, 20-1 that the niece did it, and 50-1 I bring it home to her within the year. Are you on?
I'm a poor man, Your Majesty.
There you are, you see. You are not comfortable about it yourself. If you were, you'd have closed like a shot on the happy assurance of a certainty.
I've seen enough to know that nothing's a certainty, but I'll take you in half crowns.
Had you said ponies, I'd have taken your alleged poverty into consideration and spared you. But 7 and 6, Charles, will neither make nor break you. Consequently, I shall proceed to make my statements good. Driver, this is it, thank you. Now then, Charles, come and meet Miss Clemson.
Oh, you're Peter. How very nice to see you. Rather an early visit, but I'm sure you'll excuse the sitting room being a trifle in disorder. Do come. come in.
Thank you.
It's so good of you to travel to call.
Not at all, Miss Stimson. Now, this is my friend, Detective Inspector Parker, whom I have mentioned to you.
How do you do, Mr. Parker?
How do you do?
Or ought I to say Inspector? Oh. Excuse me if I make mistakes. This is really the first time I've been in the hands of the police. I hope it's not rude for me to say that. Do go in.
Okay.
And please do sit down.
Thank you.
I know, Lord Peter, that you will not hesitate to smoke. I do so enjoy the smell of your cigarettes. Quite delicious. And you're so very good about extinguishing the ends. Now, what can I do for you?
We would like your help on something rather unusual, Miss Stimson.
But of course, Lord Peter.
Well, now, the first part of the inquiry, I'm afraid, is rather dull. I want you, if you will be so good, to go down to Somerset House and search through all the death certificates for Hampshire in November 1925. Now, what you are looking for is the certificate of an old lady of 73. Cause of death, cancer. Immediate cause, heart failure. And the certificate will have been signed by two doctors, one of whom will have been specially appointed by the cremation authorities. Now, what we would like to know are the name of the deceased and the name of the town.
Suppose there are more than one answering to the requirements.
Ah, now that is where the second part comes in, and where your remarkable tact and shrewdness are going to be so helpful to us. When you've collected all the possibles, I shall ask you to go down to each of the towns concerned and make very, very skilful inquiries to find out which is our case. I fancy you will find it pretty easy once you strike the right town, because this particular death had several unusual features which I have no doubt at all are still gossiped about. Now, if you will be so good as to read this brief digest of the story Mr. Parker and I heard last night, I'm sure you will know what to look out for.
With pleasure, Lord Peter. I go down to Somerset House at once and read it on the way. And then the moment I'm ready to leave for Hampshire, I'll let you know.
Excellent. And now we'll just make a noise like a hoop and roll away. Come along, Charles. Yes, look, while I think of it, Miss Clemson, I'd better give you something in hand for travelling expenses and so on. I think for the purpose of your inquiries in Hampshire, you had better be a retired lady in easy circumstances, looking for a nice little place in which to settle down. I don't think you'd better be wealthy. Wealthy people don't inspire confidence. Perhaps you would oblige me by living at the rate of about 800 a year. Your excellent taste will suggest the correct accessories for creating that impression.
Thank you, Lord Peter.
Not at all.
And I will send you a formal receipt as usual.
Splendid. Well, come along, Charles. Now we must go. Goodbye, Miss Clemson.
Goodbye, Lord Peter. Goodbye, Mr. Parker.
Goodbye, Miss Clemson.
And you shall hear from me as soon as possible. Goodbye.
That was Miss Clemson.
Quite. Who is she?
Miss Clemson is a manifestation of the wasteful way in which this country is run. Thousands of old maids simply bursting with useful energy, forced by our stupid social system into hydros and hotels and posters companions, where their magnificent gossip powers are allowed to dissipate themselves, while ratepayers' money is spent on getting work for which these women are providentially fitted, inefficiently carried out by ill-equipped policemen like you. By George, it's enough to make a man write to John Bull.
So, Miss Clemson's a kind of inquiry agent for you, is she?
She, Charles, is my ears, a tongue, and especially my nose. She asks questions which a young man could not put without a blush. She is the angel that rushes in where fools get a clump on the head.
This is not bad.
Well, naturally, it's mine, therefore brilliant. Just think, Charles. When people want questions asked, whom do they send? A man with large, flat feet and a notebook.
Yeah.
The sort of man whose private life is conducted in a series of inarticulate grunts.
Mm-hmm.
I send a lady with a long woolly jumper on knitting needles and jingling things around her neck. Of course she asks questions. Everybody expects it. Nobody is surprised. Nobody is alarmed. And so-called superfluity is agreeably and usefully disposed of. One of these days, you know, they're going to put up a statue to me with the inscription, "To the man who made thousands of superfluous women happy, without injury to their modesty or exertion to himself."
Care of Mrs. Hamilton Budge, Fairview, Nelson Avenue, Lee Hampton, Hants. My dear Lord Peter, You will be happy to hear, after my two previous bad shots, that I have found the right place at last. The Agatha Dawson certificate is the correct one, and the dreadful scandal about Dr. Carr is still very much alive, I'm sorry to say, for the sake of human nature. I have been fortunate enough to secure rooms in the very next street to Wellington Avenue, where Miss Dawson used to live. My landlady seems a very nice woman, though a terrible gossip, which is all to the good. Her charge for a very pleasant bedroom and sitting room with full board is 3.5 guineas weekly. I trust you will not think this too extravagant, as the situation is just what you wish me to look for. I enclose a careful statement of my expenses up to date. But you will be anxious for me, if I may use a vulgar expression, to cut the cattle and come to the horses. Well, on the day after my arrival, I informed Mrs. Bunch that I was a great sufferer from rheumatism and inquired what doctors there were in the neighbourhood. I said I would prefer an elderly doctor, as the young men, in my opinion, were not to be depended on. Mrs. Bunch heartily agreed with me, and a little discreet questioning brought out the whole story of Miss Dawson's illness, and particularly the carryings-on, as she termed them, of Dr. Carr and the nurse. "I never did trust that first nurse," said Mrs. Budge. "A sly, red-headed baggage, and it's my belief that all Dr. Carr's fussing over Miss Dawson and his visits every day were just to get love-making with Nurse Philitter. No wonder poor Miss Whittaker sent the girl back to London. Miss Whittaker is the niece, you know. This is all I've been able to do as yet. But I shall not be idle, and will write to you again as soon as I have anything to report. Believe me, sincerely yours, Alexandra Catherine Climpson."
"Oh, please, Miss Philitter, please don't be ruffled. Such a nice word, ruffled. Like a kitten, I always think, so furry and nice. Now, I'm not asking you to betray a confidence, you know, and I may say that my friend Detective Inspector Parker is looking into this matter with me, which gives me a sort of right to ask questions, rather."
"Well, in that case, yes, Lord Peter, I think I can speak freely. You're quite right. Miss Dawson did get some fancy that I was poisoning her. I admit I never saw anything of it. No aversion, I mean, or fear of me. In fact, she kissed me when I went away and gave me a little present, and said she was sorry to lose me."
"So she didn't show any nervousness about taking food from you?"
"Well, I wasn't allowed to give her any food that last week. Miss Whittaker said that her aunt had taken this funny notion and gave her all her meals herself."
"Now, that is very interesting. It was Miss Whittaker who first mentioned this little eccentricity to you, right?"
"Yes. Mm-hmm. And she begged me not to say anything about it to Miss Dawson for fear of agitating her."
"Mm-hmm."
"Yes, I thought it was a little odd at the time. Coming so soon after the maids were sacked, I mean."
"The maids?"
"Two of them. Sisters. One was a terrible crockery smasher, and Miss Whittaker gave her notice, so the other one left with her."
"Well, one can have too much of seeing the Crown Derby rolling around the floor, quite. But perhaps there was more to it than that."
"I've often wondered. You see, it was only a few days after Miss Dawson had a hysterical attack, exactly like the one she'd had when her lawyer called."
"Go on."
"Well, I'm not sure what happened exactly. The maids could tell you more about it than I could. They were doing some dusting on the landing at the time, and heard her going on, and they ran down and fetched me up to her. I'd been out for a walk and had only just come in. Miss Whittaker had been up to her with the post, I think, and there were some papers of some kind to sign, and it seems to have upset her."
"I see. And a few days later, the maids were sacked, and a week after that, a reason was found for you to leave."
"Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the maids were called?"
"Yes, Go-to-Bed. Bertha and Evelyn Go-to-Bed. I don't know where they are, but I dare say you could find out."
"Thank you, Miss Philitter. Yes, I dare say that I could."
"Oh, Edward, hello."
"Good heavens.
I'm delighted to see you, Dr. Carr. I told you I'd be turning up before long. Sherlock is my name and Holmes is my nature, what? Your little matter is well in hand, and seeing I'm not required any longer, I'll make a noise like a bee and buzz off. Goodbye, Miss Philippa. Charles, good morning. Come in, old dear, and have some breakfast. Now, where have you been hiding yourself for the past week?
I do have a job to do, Whimsy. In fact, I've been chasing an uncommonly elusive anonymous letter writer in Nottingdale.
Find him?
Her? Yes.
Good. Well, pour yourself a cup of coffee then, and let me tell you what's been happening on the Agatha Dawson front.
Uh-huh.
It's suddenly become rather thrilling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Charles, you know, you aren't taking the faintest interest in this case.
Well, I don't believe in it, you know that.
Well, listen then. You remember last week I inserted an advertisement in all the papers asking Bertha and Evelyn Gotobed, that's Miss Dawson's maid, you know, to communicate with J. Merble, solicitor of Staple Inn, where they would hear something to their advantage?
Mm-hmm.
Well, dear old Merble has just telephoned to say he's had a letter about one of them, Bertha. It seems she disappeared from her lodgings last Wednesday, and her landlady, getting anxious and having seen the advertisement, is coming to tell old Merble all she knows. The girl apparently hasn't turned up at the corner house where she was a waitress since Wednesday either.
Waitress? A nippy, you mean?
Yes.
Haven't you seen the papers?
You know that I leave such follies till after breakfast, Charles.
Well, where's the Daily Yell?
Oh, somewhere in that pile, I should think. Well, what's the matter?
I don't know.
Charles, look, what is up, Charles? Are we ordered to Shanghai? Have they taken sixpence off the income tax?
Shut up, you fool. This is serious. You're too late.
What?
Look.
Nippy found dead in Epping Forest. Good God. Bertha Gotobed.
In that episode of Unnatural Death, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Whimsy, Ian Carmichael. Miss Crimson, Ambrosine Philpotts. Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe. Dr. Carr, Peter Baldwin, Nurse Philiter, Corinna Marlowe, the waiter, Christopher Emmett. No Sign of Foul Play was adapted by Chris Miller from the book Unnatural Death by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.